Hello, this is Zbigniew Miziak from BPM Tips, and I want to invite you for a session called Reclaiming Strategy, a Crucial Element for Organizational Success, presented by Adrian Reed. Drumroll, he's here. Adrian Reed is a true advocate of business analysis profession. In his day job, he acts as principal consultant and director at Blackmetric Business Solutions, where he provides business analysis consultancy and training solutions to a range of clients in varying industries. Adrian is a president of UK chapter of International Institute of Business Analysis, and he speaks internationally on topics ranging to business, relating to business analysis and business change. First of all, thanks a lot for joining me.
Thank you, it was my pleasure.
Adrian, the title of your session is about reclaiming strategy. Could you tell why is this so important?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I mean, strategy's been an interest area of mine for some time. And what I find is that often when we say the word strategy, it like turns people's interest off. And it's sometimes seen as this like ivory tower thing where it's not real and it's so far away from everything and it's written on some grandiose poster somewhere. But the reality is I think it's really, really important. And, you know, you see in organizations every day, situations occur where strategies become disconnected. And we've probably all seen this as consumers. You know, you go and do business with an organization where it has a real vision of providing great customer service. But at the front line, they're measuring how quickly they can answer the phone and get people off the phone. So you've got this disconnect between a grandiose vision of being the best company in the world, but actually you're measuring business processes with a really blunt instrument at the very bottom. So that the reason I find it so interesting is that I think if everyone in an organization is connected to that strategy, and if our processes connect into that strategy and our projects, then actually the organization can be leaner, quicker, there can be more organizational agility, and actually the customer gets a better solution out of the back as well.
You mentioned projects and alignment. It is very often that organizations are very busy with daily work, with lots of projects that just cannot work together because they don't have, because they don't look for a strategy. Mm. How would you approach, let's say, department managers who have their own pet projects and are not particularly happy that they are not in line with strategy, and they are totally not confident and not happy with giving away their own budgets and their own power?
Yeah, that's a great question and a really difficult question too. I mean, I think it's probably something we all face, and you get, I mean, we probably all work in organizations where there are different functions or departments or market-facing units. And I mean, take process harmonization projects, for example. We've probably all had situations where everyone buys into the fact that, yes, we should rationalize our processes, we should find a common process. But every department head says, oh, except for my process, because that one's really special. So you've got this sort of desire to harmonize processes except for everyone's own process, which is, you know, is kind of counterproductive. So I mean, I think that really the project initiation and pre-project phase is so, so important. And what tends to happen, in my experience at least, is people fall in love with a solution long before they've understood the problem, the current state. And so you get projects that are initiated to implement XYZ system, for example. So, you know, we want to go out and buy a new type of ERP, CRM, or whatever it happens to be. But without thoroughly understanding the problem space, the outcomes that it's trying to object, the linkage to strategy, then there's that real danger that we'll deliver everything they've asked for, but that just isn't what they need. So I think the pre-project phase is so, so important, having good quality analysis in that phase. And also for all of us as practitioners to ask the difficult questions, like, you know, can you help me understand how this aligns to The organizational goals and strategy, which that those questions aren't always popular. But if a project really doesn't align, then either the project is wrong or the strategy's wrong. Or when I say wrong, it might be that things have evolved. And if things have evolved, then actually it's an opportunity to revisit those things and keep things aligned. So I think it's a combination of that pre-project work, but also as having the courage to ask, to know the strategy and to ask questions about alignment so that we can really ensure that things are on track, online, and will deliver that value.
You mentioned courage. It literally takes a lot of courage to discuss taking the broad perspective and think in terms of organizational strategy and success of a whole organization as compared to thinking, what can I do to make my indicators turn green? Do you have any hints how to convince the managers to take this broader perspective? You talked about asking questions, but is there anything else you can do to make them think not only in terms of their own, let's call it fiefdom?
Again, great question. I mean, off the top of my head, sort of spontaneously, one thing I like to do, you get that situation where people are talking about indicators or like small things which are unimportant in the bigger scheme of things. And sometimes I find it really interesting to ask questions like, what would a customer say about this? Or what would the regulator say about this? Or what would the consumer of this process or the person actually operating this process do? Even to the point of asking, well, what is our customer actually trying to achieve when they are interacting with this process? And that sounds like a really odd thing to say, but like, I mean, if you imagine a process to sell airplane tickets, well, it's very easy to make that the best, most efficient process for providing a ticket, but really the customer wants to get on a plane. And so if you're able to look at that broader piece about not just the ticketing, but also the provision of information so they can get to the airport on time, they know what they can bring on. And then actually start to broaden out that view of value. And well, they're not really wanting to get on a plane. They're wanting to get to their destination. It might be that the actual customer need is around, getting to a somewhere at the destination. So you can better understand what the customer is looking for. And the thing about that is that probably spans multiple fiefdoms. It'll span ticketing, but it'll span finance and operations and the rest of it. So looking at that value chain, value stream, however you want to cut it, can be one good way of doing it. And the reason I say that is largely because I think user experience and broader customer experience seem to be very much in the minds of senior people. Cutting it that way and saying, actually, what would a customer say about this is a more subtle way of having a conversation and a way that seems to really resonate.
What you mentioned are the customer journeys, customer experience. Could you tell me what is the best way in your opinion to link customer journey mapping and BPM and strategy? How to make them all run together smoothly?
Yeah, that's tricky. Tricky but important. And I think that, I mean, a technique or covering the strategy element first, a technique I come back to time and time again, and in fact, calling it a technique is too grandiose. It's really just an acronym, is VMOST. And VMOST stands for Vision, Mission, Objective, Strategy, Tactics. And I think quite visually, I always imagine it as a bit of a linked pyramid where you'd have like the vision and the mission of the organization up at the top. And that's really setting the ultimate. I mean, there's good debate about the difference between vision and mission. My take on it is that a mission is like a core purpose and probably changes very infrequently. A vision is a sort of an envisioned state that the organization wants to get to. So if you take Amazon.com, for example, I think Amazon famously had a vision to be the everything store, You know, it's wanting to stock every line of product that is possibly available. Mission is more about what it's, you know, the value that it's providing probably doesn't change too often. But then, so that's the V and the M. Then organizational level of sort of objectives, the strategies with which those will be achieved, and the sort of tactics. And I think it's worth us being aware of those things, how those things connect together, and probably the sort of processes and the well projects that we're running and processes are essentially the really important things which connect those tactics and strategies together. Because if you've got, I don't know, let's take so an organization I happen to know a lot about because I volunteer for it is the International Institute for Business Analysis. That has a global mission of uniting a community of professionals to develop better business outcomes. In the UK, we have certain objectives. So, for example, we're trying to get 1,000 members. We're going to run 24 events this year, and so on. Then we have broad strategies. So one of the ways that we are going to run 24 events is to have a thriving branch network, to have collaboration with other organizations and so on. But then there's a whole bunch of projects and process change that happens to enable that. So, you know, we are, for example, building our website to enable easier registration on events, which will help people to attend. Also, will make it easier for us to push events out. So I think that VMOST stack is really important. Linking the user journeys and processes, I think it's important to know which processes are actually delivering some of that core value, and how they're delivering it and how they connect together. Because when we talk about processes in an organizational context, the likelihood is, you know, if we abstract it to a higher level, multiple of the customer is going to touch multiple of those processes. And knowing how they're connected for that journey is really key. And I think then layering on top of that the channels. So, I mean, to give you an example, I recently had cause to provide some feedback to an organization that hadn't delivered a parcel when they said they were going to, which probably isn't that uncommon. But I went on their live chat. They had live chat on their site and couldn't get a decent response from them. So I ended up tweeting and also emailing because I think like sometimes multi-channel complaining is the way to go. And I got an immediate response on the tweet, and they resolved the issue. But then I had this series of other communications from which has resulted from the live chat and the email because actually those processes weren't joined up. And I think often in the multi-channel world, customers want the ability to deal, they might ring, but then tweet or whatever. So seeing those as completely separate departments and processes is a problem. So layering that multi-channel way on top of the processes and the journeys and linking all of that up to those objectives, I think is, and strategies is important.
Now I'd like to ask you the question that I had in mind since the very beginning of the interview, but you're telling so many interesting stuff that I just had to ask additional questions. Now, let me ask you about the 3-month challenge. Imagine you're a manager of BPM team, the board recently changed, and you have 3 months to show the BPM value to the organization. What would you do? How would you make sure that the BPM project or projects that you select will create real value, something visible within those 3 months, and they will support strategy execution. So, what would you do?
Great question. These are great questions. I think it largely depends on the maturity of the organization and how well it has embraced analysis and BPM up until that time. But assuming that it hasn't necessarily matured to a very mature level, I think one of the things it's interesting. One of the things I hear time and time and time again in all the organizations I work for is everyone wants to be agile. And agile in software development has a, you know, a useful set of techniques, as is incremental and iterative and all the other techniques, they have a place. But it's like in executives' minds, more and more executives seem to be asking for agile. I think what they often really mean is agility. So rather than agile as a technique or a specific technique, they're thinking about agility. And one of the challenges I think that organizations and executives often find is change is slow because they don't know what's there at the moment or they don't know how the current state works. So every time we want to change a minor thing, someone has to go out and figure out how the current process works, how that interfaces with existing systems, the people that are involved. Because if you don't do that, you risk breaking it. You know, you're kind of prodding and hoping that nothing breaks. So I think one key message is actually, if we do this right, then we can be more, the organization can have more agility, and we can move more quickly. But I think alongside the bigger piece of really understanding our processes, and that's by the way, does start to get into a conversation about business architecture, which is of course an interesting but a slightly different angle. But I think alongside that, there's a good question about what can we do right now that will show quantifiable value in the short term. So there's almost the purist in us as practitioners that would say, well, you know, if we had our way, we'd create a great, you know, a nice model in a repository, and everything would be great. That's important, but probably not as important in the short term as creating some real quantifiable value. So I would look at doing the two, you know, like the strategic holistic thing alongside, okay, but what's the organization feeling right now? Where's the pain? And how can we solve that and really prove the value? I think alongside those two things, the strategic, but also creating some really tangible quick wins, the other thing I would look to do is actually look externally at the environment. Because I think the minute as practitioners we can start going to the head of department or the execs or whoever and saying, well, you know what? I think our market's being disrupted, my observation is that there's lots of disruption happening. So in the taxi market, you've got Uber, you know, in hotels, you've got Airbnb. Well, what disruptions going to happen to our market? And just creating those, as long as we've got rapport with the relevant stakeholders, creating those conversations is really interesting, because that's when we might start to really shape the projects that are coming down line. And of course, having those strategic conversations up front, but then showing the value so we can say, actually, look, you know, if we were to do this bit of investigative project, we could help you with your, you know, the more we can inform the decision makers to make informed decisions, I think the more popular we'll be. And it's about sort of helping those and showing the value. But the real credibility comes through delivery. So the sooner we can deliver something, I think the more that people will be lining up to really want to, you know, really want to work with us and do more of what we do.
You mentioned additional topic, but I just have to ask a question about. You mentioned something that is also covered in another session, so the outside in look at the organization. So do you have any special tips, any good approaches towards this way of thinking? How would you help managers think like this, that not take the inside out, but outside in perspective? Mm-hmm. You only show them examples. So think of potential Uber for your market, or will you do something else?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I think questions like that, like the what is our Uber, because it's so well known, is it's quite an interesting question. I think techniques that I like to use, and again, these aren't strictly BPM techniques, but they're complementary. I really like the business model canvas to work out, you know, what's our current business model and how might that change, and start to really ask questions like, you know, you can start to really play with it. It's like, well, if you're currently selling a product that's purchased once, you can ask questions like, well, what if it's a subscription-based model? What would that look like? And start to really drive innovation. And I mean, the Business Model Canvas book is great. It's a really, really good book. And if anyone listening to this hasn't heard of that technique, there's a great YouTube video that explains it in like 5 minutes, and it's well worth a 5 minute investment of time. So I think that technique is great. And then also, and I know this is a bit of a cliched technique these days, but the traditional old school strategic analysis techniques, like I mean, there's various versions of it, but PESEL or STEEPLE, so looking at social, technological, economic, those sorts of things, as brainstorming just to see what's out there. Also things like Porter's Five Forces. Again, I know that's considered quite a traditional technique, but thinking about, well, not just who are our competitors, but who are the substitutes. So, you know, so I mentioned airlines and air tickets earlier. Well, actually, maybe a competitor is a train. So knowing you're competing with trains is quite important. So I think those sorts of techniques can be useful. But it is, I think, that, and at risk of being a bit controversial, I think the using the term disruption, that just gets everyone listening. So if we can get that into conversation, it seems like people's ears perk up.
You mentioned the Business Model Canva and other techniques. Could you share your list of favorite techniques, maybe some new techniques that people did not hear about, and or some additional techniques apart from the one that you already mentioned that new BPM practitioners should add to their skill box to be ready for 2017?
Yeah, I mean, particularly with a strategy hat on. So thinking about strategy, I think VMost, as I've mentioned, the Steeple, the Business Model Canvas, the five forces are probably the sort of key ones. I think it's interesting because we often quite rightly focus on the hard techniques and the techniques that enable us to do the you know, the business process management, business process modeling, business process improvement, and we could talk about those. But there's another side, and it's something I think in the community we probably don't talk about enough, and that's the fact that you could be the best practitioner in the world, but actually, if you can't build rapport and speak with people and get people to want to be part of the change, then the change will fail. And so, for example, something I started to do a few years ago just because I was interested, was actually look up how salespeople sell things. Because ultimately, whatever the title we have, or whether we talk about analysis, BPM, often there's an element of selling it, you know, creating awareness. And a technique that I think is like a fundamental technique that every salesperson knows about, but I'd not really heard about, was a technique called FAB, which stands for features and benefits. And the idea being that, you know, often I think we talk about the features of what we do. So, I mean, again, with my business analyst hat on, I might say, well, we want to create a business case, or we want to work with you on a business case. And that business case will have net present value, and it'll, but actually, no one really cares about that. What they care about, what they're buying, is the benefit. It's the, you know, so a business case enables a decision maker to make an informed decision and de-risk a project and know the amount that they're likely to get back. So it's like, we're going to help you make this qualified bet on the project that you're going to run. So I think features and benefits is really important. Another technique, and again, calling it a technique is a bit grand, but I came across a couple of years ago, is UCOB. And UCOB stands for user, customer, owner, and beneficiary. And the titles are unimportant, but they're actually, I think, again, it actually originated in sales, and it's about how you position a product. But I find it really useful in process and analysis generally, because you can start to ask, okay, well, who's actually using this process, this whatever that we're playing with? The customer, well, who's actually the economic customer? Who's buying the product? And actually the user of the product or services might be a very, very different person, particularly if you're business to business. Who's going to own it and maintain it, and who's the beneficiary? I mean, to give you a less abstract example, if you imagine we were, and again, this is not specifically a BPM example, but if you imagine somebody was, I don't know, making bits of hospital equipment, sell these expensive machines, 50 of them, to a national chain of hospitals. Well, it's like the customer, the economic buyer, is someone in a purchasing department somewhere. But the user, well, that's a doctor or a nurse, and they probably don't care about the cost. They care about reliability. And the owner, well, that's an individual clinic, and they might not care about the purchase cost, but they care about the run cost and the maintenance cost. And the beneficiary is the poor patient being prodded, and they just want the thing to be over and to be as pain-free as possible. So that understanding those different perspectives, and the interesting thing about UCOB is you could look at it at BPM. So, you know, who's our beneficiary, who's our owner, who's so on. You could look at it in individual processes. You can look at it at products. You can look at it at projects. So a really simple but concise and useful technique as well.
Awesome. It was great. It was a very interesting angle to look at it from. Actually, what we are doing to some extent is copywriting. We are trying to convince others to do well what are our ideas. So it was very interesting to look from the salesman perspective.
Yeah. And there's lots of great resources out there in the sales environment. So if you know, I think it's well worth a Google, just as a kind of side research project, but it's well worth a Google.
Now, the next question, you mentioned alignment, and what would you do if your organization does not have actionable strategy? Well, maybe it has something that just hangs nicely on the wall of the CEO, but this is something that has totally no connection between what you're doing daily. What would you do if the strategy is very, very broad and it means absolutely nothing?
Yeah. Panic, I think. So I think, I mean, I say slightly facetiously panic. I think that when I'd finish panicking, I think I'd probably see it as an opportunity. And it's interesting because sometimes I think we look for strategy and there is a vacuum there. It's like it's empty, and or there's a layer of strategy missing. So like we might work for a global organization that has something so broad that it applies to the globe, but actually for this market facing business unit in this region, there's nothing. And I would tend to look at that as an opportunity to. And again, this is probably slightly aspirational for us as practitioners, but like if we can't align to it, maybe we can help define it, you know, because actually the very skills that we have and the experiences we have, we can help our execs to think about the direction that they're taking the organization. Now clearly we are just facilitating that conversation. Yeah, that conversation is owned by others. But if we observe that it's missing, then actually we can facilitate that conversation. I think it's really important. I think it's difficult when if you have a strategy or a vision or whatever that is so broad that's like, well, we want to create good shareholder value. But you look at that and think, well, yeah, but which organization doesn't? So I think yeah, having those conversations, if there really isn't anything there, and if it really isn't actionable, and if we really haven't got the opportunity to define something, then at the very, very least, what we can do is define the strategy for the projects or changes we're working on. And again, with my BA hat on, business analyst hat on, the Business Analysis Body of Knowledge Guide version 3, one of the neat things about that upgrade to version 3 is it talks about defining a change strategy. You know, so actually the fact that you know, ideally that would link to an organizational strategy, but if that link is missing, at least we can get everyone on board with, okay, here's the strategic assumptions we're making, and here's the strategy for what we're doing in our in our picture, but clearly the desirable thing is to have that alignment to a bigger thing, or define it if it's not there.
What are the worst errors that you see and that organizations should avoid when it comes to linking BPM with strategy? So what can go wrong?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things to be wary of is that for these things to become a bit of a passing fad that just kind of come and go. So, for example, like the strategy, I mean, a good example you gave about strategy not being communicated, that's really, it's crucial that the strategy is communicated and it's not hidden 30 links deep on an intranet where nobody's ever going to see it. So visibility is really, really crucial. And I also think, particularly with BPM, it's very easy to end up, if we're not careful, it's very easy to end up with some very, very useful models that nobody actually uses. And I'm sure we all avoid doing that, but actually making sure that we're thinking about the change we're implementing, that we're thinking about how the artifacts will be used, how they'll be maintained, who they're going to be owned by, and how those linkages are going to be maintained as well, is really crucial. So I think communication and maintenance, if we can build this thing so that it is, so there is that organizational agility, then people will thank us for it in the long term. It'll create, be more effort in the short term, but they'll thank us for it in the long term.
Sounds also like a great parenting tip.
Yeah.
They will be thankful in the long term.
For sure.
Now I'd like to ask you additional question related to BPM and managers. I had a chance to ask many people about what to do if there is no significant knowledge of BPM between managers. Do you think that if they don't care about BPM, all hope is lost, or could you just do what you suggested? So you would ask for their pain points and you would tell, I have something for you, but not mentioning BPM. What would you do?
Yeah, I personally would look at their pain points, look at their aspirations for the organization. And again, it depends on how much they know. But if they know nothing, they're probably not going to care about the term. What they want to know is it enables them to get their organization to where they want it to get to. Another element, I remember speaking to someone in a really senior in an organization, and I was having a good conversation with him, and I asked him, how should we talk, what keeps you up at night? What do you worry about? And I just remember him saying, he said, you're just always really worried that somebody somewhere is going to mess up. And he said, and when you're senior in an organization, you might not even know about that, but you're going to take the accountability for it. And so for that particular stakeholder, talking about de-risking was really important. The minute you could say, well, we can de-risk XYZ by doing whatever, that was the sweet spot. So I think knowing us, it comes back to, we talked a little bit about some hard skills, but also some of the softer skills. Really knowing our stakeholders, knowing what makes them tick, and framing it and selling, selling it in that way, in a way that's really meaningful for them. Yeah.
Now a little bit tricky question. How do you see the future of BPM in 10 years?
Yeah, do you know what? 10 years is a long time.
Yes, I know. Almost everybody that I ask the question tells, oh no, 5 years, it is easy. We almost every day answer questions, how do you see the future in 5 years? But 10, it is tricky.
Do you know what? I think there will be more and more. I mean, we mentioned business architecture earlier, and I think there's going to be more and more focus on business architecture, and I think the conversation will shift to organizational agility. And I think that's a great opportunity because if we've got well-managed processes, actually, you've got a fighting chance of being able to change quickly. Another thing which is really interesting, and I'm not entirely, I've no idea how this will affect our world and business more generally, but I think, you see like machine learning, artificial intelligence, accelerating, and you think, well, could we get to a situation where we've got self-healing processes and self-learning processes? Sounds crazy, but you think, well, actually, organizations in financial services are crunching data to work out who they should lend money to. Actually, take that up another level. Maybe we can have processes that adapt and take in all this data, and so more, perhaps even more focus on data and decision making and on an automated level. And I know there's focus on that already, but bringing it up a level. And the other thing I wonder is, and again, this is a slightly looking outside, is I know that there's talk of microservices and breaking things down, and that's very useful. I wonder whether in the longer term, actually, there will be more organizations orchestrating processes which are actually made up of capabilities provided by other small organizations. So maybe there will be, organizations that create this, there's some product that's going to the customer, but what the customer doesn't know is that there are, 10 little pieces that are created by 10 smaller vendors in that piece, and it's the process that brings it all together. And then if the customers need changes, you swap out one of those services, one of those, vendors or whatever, which creates some really interesting conversations about integration on a process level, but also a technical level, and so on. What I would predict, though, is that we will still be having some of the conversations that we have today. Execs and stakeholders will still be going out there falling in love with solutions, and we'll be having to say, "Have you really thought that through?" So I think we'll be more recognized, but I think the selling will still be, or the creating that compelling picture of what we do will still be as important in 10 years as it is today.
So both BPM practitioners and business analysts can be safe that there will still be demand for their jobs.
I think so. I think I mean, you look at both roles, and actually the first word in those roles is business. And it's like, as long as there are businesses, or in fact organizations, because it might be a government or a not-for-profit, I think there will be a place for what we do. I think there will be more call for us to operate at a consultant type level, so like an internal consultant. And I think the bar is definitely being raised. I mean, I speak particularly from a business analysis career standpoint. That bar is being raised, and rightly so, because we're trusted advisors often to the business. So I think there's more and more within those roles of being perceived as a trusted advisor. And so quite rightly that the bar rises. I think there's interesting conversations about certification and that sort of thing, but that's a conversation for another time.
And now the last question. You're doing lots of great stuff. There are many interesting posts on your site. You got an awesome newsletter. What are the best ways that people can connect with you?
Yeah, thank you. So probably the immediate thing, if people have liked hearing what we've had to say on this session. So my blog, I think I've published over 240 articles. I need to get out more. So it's www.adrianreed.co.uk. And if you like it, if you hit the subscribe button, you'll get articles when they are announced. You can also sign up to we have a broader newsletter which is issued every 6 weeks, which is not just articles that I've written, but it's links to useful resources around the web. And I can we can provide a link to that to sign up to that as well. And if anyone's interested in any sort of training or consultancy, if they took a look, take a look at our sort of main website, which is blackmetric.co.uk, you can get in touch, and we, very much value a conversation with anyone that's found any of this interesting.
And also, if you are from UK, maybe you would like to learn more about the Institute of Business Analysis to help
Indeed.
reach the 1,000 milestone
Yeah.
and greatly help your own career.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not just in, I mean, definitely the UK. So if you are based in the UK, if you go to www.iibauk.org, events all around the UK. So we're 24 real world events we're holding this year and 9 virtual events. If you are out of the UK, check out www.iiba.org, because there are chapters all around the world as well. So yeah, absolutely, definitely, definitely worth it. Very, very valuable organization. I've learned so much by being a part of it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. I was glad I could be a part of this. Thanks.